Good morning and welcome to Lopes on Movies. My name is Joey Lopes and today I am joined by the one, the only Mark.
That is me.
So I tried to do like sort of a spooky voice thing in this intro.
Was that spooky?
Yeah, I feel like
a circus guy.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't really commit. Like I kind of wavered my voice
like
a little
Twilight
bit.
Twilight Zone thing.
I know, but I didn't really plan the bit, you know, like it occurred to me in the moment. So I was like, maybe I'll,
as you were saying,
yeah, like I'll waver my voice a little bit, like doing like the ooh ghost.
You tried to pivot.
But yeah, I feel like I didn't fully commit and now it's just kind of weird.
Yeah, a little.
We're starting this episode off a little weird, but you know.
A little kooky, a little spooky.
I think that's okay.
Because it is October.
That's the idea, right? Like last week, we didn't really talk about anything like anything spooky, you know? I feel like that's kind of like, it's already in the middle of October now. So like we're kind of late to the curve on
I contributed to spookiness.
Wait, what did you talk about? I already forget what we talked about last week.
I talked about Mad God.
Mad God. Right. That's right. You did your episode. Okay. That is appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we like
Spooktober.
Did you? I don't remember if we did like a whole bit about it being October and you know.
I said I did actually. I pitched the movie on the strength of it being spooky.
Okay. Okay. Good.
And they released it in summer. Should have been released now in October.
That's right. I remember you saying that this would have been a much better time for that movie. Yeah.
It just makes
no
sense whatsoever. I mean, like it's so sad that all these movies get such limited releases.
Yeah.
When we're hitting it almost like every week now.
I know.
Where a movie goes direct to streaming that ought to get its day in the sun in the theater, but who knows? People maybe don't go to them anymore. I don't think so, though.
I think that with enough marketing, there might be people going to it. But like, I feel like every time a movie comes out and it bombs, there's this huge like, oh, people just don't go to the theater anymore. But no one ever hears about movies. You know, like I feel like the way that they're marketing movies now, it's just like it's terrible. Like that movie Amsterdam that just came out. It's a David O. Russell movie, and I think his last movie American Hustle, which I hated, by the way.
But that did
it did well. It was a successful movie and it was well reviewed. Whereas this Amsterdam movie has been a complete colossal bomb, but is one of the most like star studded casts you'll ever see in your life.
Well, that sounds exactly like American Hustle. So he did the same thing, probably.
Oh yeah, there was no chance of me going to see that movie because I think
there's
David
no
O. Russell's
fanfare for anything.
But, yeah, they just didn't advertise it. Like they didn't do anything. Like I don't understand like why there's always this like oh theaters are dead when there's they're
Nobody
not doing
talks.
The work.
Yeah, I mean like I didn't even really hear all that much about. The counterpoint to this, which is Top Gun, which killed it in theaters for months and
exactly.
months.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you could still do this. I don't know.
Yeah, it's completely possible. I just think that, you know, whatever. And I'm sure there's plenty of arguments like Top Gun is a brand that people remember. It's got Tom Cruise, whatever. But like those things kind of ring hollow to me a little bit because there's plenty of brand things that come back and fail just because they're not. Like good or they're not advertised very well
or
whatever.
There's
plenty of reasons why Top Gun Maverick was a tremendous success more than just its name recognition, I think.
It helps that it was a legitimately good movie.
It helps that it was a legitimately good movie, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, what can you do? That's the time we're living in. And as a result, all of us feel some desire to retreat to the movies of the past.
Yes.
Because they're those ones are pretty reliable. A lot of the time, you know, the greats of cinema. And well, we're going to talk about one of those movies today that I'd never seen. You apparently
really?
Have seen it many
wait,
times.
Wait. You've never seen this before?
Yeah, this was the first time I had ever
wow.
seen this movie, which is...
This is one of my all-time favorites.
Really? Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I feel like we need a good, like, you know, unambiguously positive episode of Lopes.
Yeah,
on
that
movies,
helps.
You know?
It's
so
nice.
Ignore everything we said about the death of movie theaters and everything, because we're going to talk about a very good movie, John Carpenter's The Thing. Movie's from 1982. Okay, it was between 84 and 82.
There you go.
And John Carpenter is one of those directors that like I've seen a couple of his movies. We talked about They Live on the show, I remember, which is a great movie. But he's definitely like, he's a director with a very vast body of work, most of which I have not seen. And The Thing is one of his, like, at this point, most well-regarded movies.
Very varied career.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting career.
He's all over the place. It's kind of just a very skilled filmmaker across the board.
No question about it. I think John Carpenter, like, even ignoring the movies that he's made, I feel like he's living the perfect life, like the life that I aspire to, which, you know, early in his career, he created something that for the rest of his life will generate him revenue and he'll never have to work again and can just sit at home playing video games. Like, I just read an interview with him from like this today where like people will ask him like questions about movies and stuff and he's always like, ah, whatever, I don't know. And they
are you saying that he coasted on Halloween?
Oh yeah, yeah, he hosted on Halloween big time. Well, that's a huge thing in interviews when people ask him like, oh, so what do you think of like the Halloween sequels and everything, you know? And it's like, he's just like, well, you know, there's this wonderful thing that happens, which is, you know, I'll get a call once every couple years that they're going to make a new Halloween movie. And then I put out my hand and a check appears in it. it's like, oh, I love this guy. He's got the right idea. Because to me, it's like, you know, he made Halloween, which is like regarded by many people as just an unimpeachable masterpiece. So what does he care what they do with the IP afterwards? You know, like the thing that's great, like the movie that is the classic exists will always be available. Like, so it doesn't matter
get any
if they.
Worse.
Yeah, yeah. It's never going to get any worse. So regardless of how many terrible sequels they make, as long as he's getting paid, he's happy. Whatever.
You could see that he's getting paid.
Yeah. But then like they interview him today and it's like all he talks about is video games. It's like,
that's not bad.
He has like the most basic taste in games, but it's so charming because he's just like, I love that game. That game's great. It's like it seems like he just likes every game.
Gamer
plays everything.
John Carpenter.
Yeah, it's so awesome. So he is genuinely living the perfect life, the life that I think all people should aspire to, which is that you create some incredible pieces of work and then just decide to never work again and just play video games all day and collect money.
Fair enough.
So yeah, good for him. You know, good for John Carpenter. We wish him the best. And I'm glad that we can go back and watch some of these classic films that he's made, including The Thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, The Thing is kind of like, I don't really know where to start, because I feel like generally speaking, people kind of know what the premise of The Thing is, because it's just so big in pop culture.
The premise itself is the most iconic part of the movie. Probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you want to like maybe take that and just kind of like give like a basic synopsis of what it is?
I'm going to avoid the obvious cultural touchstone, as I mentioned earlier, because if I say those magic words, I'm just going to leave.
More video game related stuff.
I can't handle it.
No, I wasn't planning on it.
It's like a bunch of guys at a Antarctic research station are snowed in, and there is a thing. Oh no, I almost said the words. I'm gonna skip that part. But it's hiding among them. It's pretending to be one of them. And they have to try and figure out who it is. It's got a star-studded cast.
I guess, at least in hindsight, I don't think it was.
Yeah, maybe they came into it, but
like this was like Keith David's first movie, which I think is crazy.
Okay.
Or like it
this
was
is
first
still
like major
one of
movie.
Kurt Russell's biggest roles.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like this is maybe the top of his game.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got that majestic beard and hair. He's the I guess you could call it the character design in this is just great.
It's a good
and it
way
even
to put
goes
it, yeah.
past that, because like I don't know if we want to just jump right into it, but everything is at play in this. I feel like this is one of those horror movies that really is just able to do everything without cheating.
Mm-hmm.
The practical effects in this movie are some of the best ever put to screen. And
oh yeah,
they may never actually be topped.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I gotta say though, when I went into work this morning, one of my coworkers, I mentioned that I had watched this movie, and he was like, "Ah, man, I just don't like those practical effects. I almost like blew my
That's so.
I was losing my mind.
That's
I had to restrain myself.
Yeah, I almost said some choice things just now as well.
I don't know how you watch this movie wrong. And not just think that is the special effects are awesome.
It's so good. Well, the really cool part about it is they're able to hold it back. They don't go all in on it because since it's disguised among them, I threw myself off by saying that again, but they get to create these moments of tension that build up and up and up until they just burst into Visayra, mm-hmm. and you get this like dog monstrosity or somebody turns into the thing mm-hmm. as it's trying to escape because mm-hmm. it is a weak creature, but it's really strong one-on-one apparently. You don't really get to see any of the fights. It's not about that stuff.
Yeah.
It's much more subtle than any slasher movie
mm-hmm.
because almost I think every kill by the monster happens off screen mm-hmm. because if you were able to see it, you would know who it was and that would take you out of the movie.
Right.
Because half the fun is like, especially on the first watch, you just have no idea where it could be hiding.
Right.
And even then it keeps ambiguous. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and that's like the whole kind of that's really the crux of the movie is the sort of politics of this group that mm-hmm. like they find out very early what's going on. Like there's not a lot of deliberation where they have to figure out what the situation is. Like very mm-hmm. early in the movie they know that one of them or more than one of them is an imposter. And is this monster. So like it's very, very early on there, like the paranoia starts setting in. Like, well, what do we do about this? You know, how do we figure this out? And it just escalates and escalates. And it's mm-hmm. I love the way the movie starts. I think this is one of the most like efficient movies that you'll ever see. Just right from the beginning. It's so perfect. Like the you get this. For the first thing that you see is you see like the UFO kind of like crashing on Earth, whenever that was, just to set up that there is an alien involved here. But after that, you get this helicopter chasing a dog through, mm-hmm. you know, this Antarctic landscape,
vast Antarctic desert.
And they're shooting at this dog, and you don't know why, you don't know exactly what's going on, but they're trying to kill the dog. And then finally, we meet up with the crew that we're going to be dealing with. This I presume American crew. Of guys mm-hmm. that are stationed here doing, you know, whatever it is. I don't even know what they're stationed there for, but they're stationed there for something. And this helicopter meets up in the same area as them, and the dog meets up in the same area as them. And it just like right from the beginning, the horror of the situation begins with just like sort of a comedy of errors where the helicopter lands and the guys come out of the helicopter and right from the
start,
they're shouting, they're Norwegian. There's a language barrier. So they don't understand each other. Like the Americans stationed there and the Norwegians don't understand each other. One guy tries to throw a grenade at the dog, which is now running into the American camp, but drops it, and he just explodes, and and the helicopter explodes. Meanwhile, the other Norwegian guy just desperately is just shouting and trying to shoot this dog. And of course, the American guy's like, what is going on? This guy's got a gun. He's just firing randomly. So so they shoot him dead. And they have no idea mm-hmm. what's going on. It's just a complete disaster. But of course, we learn that these Norwegian guys went through a similar fate as to what's about to befall the American crew, which is that this thing infiltrates their camp. And so these are the two surviving Norwegians trying to destroy it, trying to kill it. It's just such a perfectly efficient way to start the movie. Yeah.
And
it's
and
so
the paranoia
like,
starts right off the bat.
Yeah. And I just think it's so great how guys. Like it takes no time at all for them to pretty much figure out what's going on. Like they figure out that there's this creature that can shapeshift that's somewhere in the group. They don't know if one of them is a creature or not. And then from there it's just kind of figuring it out. To me it's one of I've probably seen a decent amount of Kurt Russell performances, but even more so than like Snake Plissken, which is probably his other like big John Carpenter thing.
Yeah.
Like this to me is like the coolest character that he's ever played. I love MacReady. I think he's so perfect.
Well, he's just like naturally He's not the leader. He's like the outcast almost in the mm-hmm. in the whole situation before he's kind of reluctantly thrust into this central role of like, they know he's not infected because he's got like double alibis or something like that. So mm-hmm. he's just kind of naturally the guy who has to take command and like step up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just got a really, really interesting, I don't know, like energy about him for that.
Yeah, he's very level-headed compared to a lot of the other guys. But I really appreciate how, like, early in the movie, they discover, like, probably the most horrifying thing on Earth, which is just, like, this mangled, disgusting human corpse that makes no sense anatomically. And they discover that at the Norwegian camp, and MacReady and one of the other crew members bring it back and just, like, plop it on a table and say, we found this. And the whole crew is looking at it. And then, meanwhile, I'm just thinking, like, If I was here, I would probably be throwing up. I'd be losing my mind. But all of these guys, you got to remember, this is a couple of weirdos that are stationed in Antarctica. You know, a bunch of guys stationed together for who knows how long. Like this is a weird group of guys. They're very, very tough. Like kind of like mentally, emotionally, whatever. So they get to work on trying to figure out what this thing is right away. But it's a very interesting dynamic between all of those characters because of like the strange personalities that you encounter. And MacReady is like the perfect example.
Yeah, he's
of
the
that
good central.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like he's a very good access for all these other weirdos to spin off of because they all have their little like quirks. Like some of them, there's the guy who just absolutely adores the dogs
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't have a very good time. I do recall the radio jockey guy is quite good. And then Wilford Brimley, of course, who's
classic.
As always playing Wilford Brimley. And he's, I mean, like, just always fun. It's always fun to see Wilford Brimley just bumbling around.
Oh, yeah. And he's
even
great
if he's got a death imminent. Yeah.
I mean, everybody's got a death imminent in this movie. You know that it can't possibly end like super well.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, there's so many ways you could go into things about this movie that are great. One thing that I of course really appreciate is the music, which is an interesting.
Yes, I was going to mention this.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting soundtrack. Yeah, Ennio Morricone. And the thing that I think I was reading up about this because I was curious because the movie doesn't really feature all that much music
score,
in a traditional sense.
Yeah, it's very limited.
But my understanding is that, and this sort of happened with Tarantino when he worked with Morricone on The Hateful Eight, where it's like there was very little communication between the director and the composer. So like, John Carpenter basically wanted Morricone because he just loved his music, you know, same thing as Tarantino. And like there was almost no communication, and Morricone was like, what do you want me to make? I don't even know what to do. So he basically just made like a bunch of music and a large part of it attempting to imitate John Carpenter's musical style.
I was
going to
say, it sounds like John Carpenter music,
so
which
is
a little unfortunate.
Well, I think there's something kind of cool about that, though, because Morricone, when he needed to, could be a chameleon, you know? Like, he busted out the synths and did a John Carpenter thing, and of course Carpenter loved it, and that's what you hear as the main theme.
I guess it's
got to
feel like the coolest fan art of all time.
Right?
You're getting, like, spun off by the best composer ever.
Yeah,
so
right?
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of unused music that is, like, from, like, the score that Morricone composed that is in, like, the soundtrack album, but doesn't actually make it in the movie. But I think, like, that main theme is just so perfect. Like, that playing over the opening credits while they're chasing the dog, and it just gets you, like, so
it's
in the mood.
It's so striking.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
That one in particular, I saw this movie in 35mm several years ago now.
That's real lucky.
And the print we had was just a little bit yellowed at the start, but even through that, that opening scene, like you were saying, is just so, so great. And then later on, when there's a lot of fire, the color contrast between that and like the blue dark of the exterior environment was really, really cool.
Oh, it's a gorgeous movie. This is one of those those movies that John Carpenter did with the Dean Cundey, the cinematographer. And I wish that I knew more about Carpenter and their collaboration to speak more intelligently about it, but I feel like that's sort of it, and one of those iconic director cinematographer duos in movie history. So it's definitely something that I need to brush up on myself and watch a lot more of these movies. But yeah, it's gorgeous. Like I was so blown away by the shots when they're like examining the alien spaceship. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like one part of the movie that has these like really extensive kind of vistas. But the way that that's composed and the matte paintings are so gorgeous.
They're great.
Yeah, it's incredible.
For like a movie that basically takes place in a wasteland and like a clinical laboratory environment, you never really feel like it's like very sterile. It feels so lived in. The set design is amazing. You really feel like these guys have been spending months and months and months together in this place.
For sure.
Everything's kind of grungy. And the lighting is just incredible. You mentioned the spaceship for the aliens, but even their interiors kind of feel like one.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally.
Just great.
So I'm curious your thoughts on this. So the historically speaking, this movie did not do particularly well upon release and was not reviewed very well, which is one of those like kind of historical anomalies that always surprises people.
Yes.
What do you think is the reason why this didn't connect with people back then? Because there's a lot of theories that were thrown around, like, oh, it was just too nihilistic. You know, it came out the same weekend as E.T.
No, that's totally wrong.
Like, and I feel like there's other movies that were like...
The entire 70s leading up to this movie is filled with horrifically nihilistic filmmaking.
Yeah, right.
The endings of those are far more nihilistic than even this one, which doesn't have a particularly happy ending. If I had to hazard a guess, and I'm not someone who's as well read as I maybe ought to be on 70s horror, those ones are more active horror. Mm-hmm. I think like Texas Chainsaw, that's like where the slasher movie stuff starts.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume Texas Chainsaw was relatively successful during its time, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that one was under the radar like this.
I actually think that the director, Tobe Hooper, was... originally attached to The Thing, actually, before even Carpenter was.
There you go.
Yeah.
But that even speaks to what I'm talking about. Maybe the expectation was on more over-the-top, ostentatious sort of horror. I do like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but that's very in-your-face.
Mm-hmm.
This is so much more subtle and subdued by comparison, even with the incredible special effects and everything else, that maybe it was just so far out of the wheelhouse of everybody who was into this kind of thing. That it just kind of was like so out of left field expectation wise that people just kind of rejected it. It's not by the numbers in that sense.
Yeah, it was one of those weird cases where like it wasn't a bomb, but it also wasn't like super successful.
But there aren't that many horror movies before or after this that are like this in tone.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually does stand to reason. Like, it's so, like, it's not quite iconoclastic or anything like that, but it's so out there, that it's just its own thing.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a pun intended on that. but I agree with you. I think it's interesting, like, hearing Carpenter talk about it, too, where he's like, man, I wish that movie would have been more successful. You know, it's one of my favorite ones that I made, and my career might have been different. Where he's like, it's not like I dislike the movies that I made after The Thing, but, you know, I needed money. I took jobs that I maybe otherwise wouldn't have taken, you know. But it's one of those movies that has just kind of gotten its reputation over time, where it took a while for it to catch on with you know, a wider audience. But at some point, it was almost just like a corrective. It was like, what were we doing? How did this not immediately become iconic, you know?
It really is one of the, I would say, one of the greatest of all time movies in general, just in terms of execution. Every element of this movie is firing. It's so, so good.
Yeah. But to me, it's a very, very efficient movie. Like, there was some complaints, apparently, in contemporary reviews, like, all the characters are kind of dull, there's not much development to them. I'm like...
It's about the situation, though.
I don't care. Yeah, it's about the situation. Like,
there's also too many of them to have proper development for any but a scant few. Plus, you have to kill most of them. So.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't think the characters need to be developed. They just need to be good archetypes to fit the situation.
Yeah, they need to be recognizable. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, if you can... The real like skill here is not in having character arcs in a movie like this. It's about making them like the silhouette of a proper character,
yeah,
so that you can at least remember this big of a cast.
Yeah.
Like, even you heard me earlier, dog guy, radio guy, doctor guy, all this stuff, or like slightly suspect guy. These things are what you need because you need to remember like a dozen and a half characters on some level.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you're not going to remember if they're dead.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all about just like recognizable archetypes.
Yep.
Understanding who each character is like right off the bat.
There's not enough time to pay attention to any development here.
Yeah, and it's just like it's not what the movie's about. You know, the movie is very much more about the mechanics of the situation and how they navigate it. Right.
Been an active detriment to this movie.
Yeah.
To try to have anything in that sort of vein.
Yeah, because the movie needs to be efficient. Like I said, like it's moving quickly. It's getting through each situation very quickly, and it's really just a matter of getting you to recognize those characters and then going, you know, just kind of letting the movie work.
So I have one more question.
Sure.
And this one's good because I think it plays to the spookiness of this movie. So apparently it is a long-standing tradition in anyone who has to go to an Antarctic research station, you have to watch this movie when you're down there to like, otherwise they'll send you back. Do you think you can manage that? Like, you're in this place watching this movie.
Well, you know, like, I'm sure I could do it, but I'm just built different, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think... you know, if you turn the lights off, you know, you get the sound really loud in a nice dark room and you watch this movie. It works, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
it does its job. You know, it's one of the greats for a reason. I'm super glad to have watched it. I think that you can't go wrong watching The Thing for your kind of Halloween.
Your horror movie needs.
Horror movie needs, you know. Like Mark said, it's not like... like a modern horror movie, but it's absolutely an incredible piece of work. And you should go check it out. If you haven't seen it before, like myself, maybe I'll go back and watch Halloween too, the original John Carpenter.
If you
happen
to be up here in New York for whatever reason, there is a 35mm screening, I believe, next week.
Wow. Do you know the date?
Yeah. I think it should be next Monday, third Monday of the month.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I would go to that if I was
quite cool. Was
I'm pretty sure they're also, don't they also have like a Hitchcock series at
Hitchcocktober.
Hitchcocktober. Yeah. I think we should go see Dial M for Murder at that.
That would be a good one.
To talk about that movie on the show because I want to rewatch that movie at some point. But now we're just talking about the future. Everybody, we will see you next week for, you know, more October spooky film goodness or something entirely different because we make these decisions the night before. So we will see you next week.
Bye.